this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 7th, 2011, and this is show number 324. Well, I have a couple of really, really important announcements to make, so get out your calendars to take some notes. While you're bringing it up or digging it out of your bag like a Luddite, I'll tell you about a non-calendar related announcement first. As you heard me whining a while back, Amazon and the state of California, amongst others, are in a tiff over sales tax, and the affiliates in the states have lost a revenue stream as a result. The great news is that I've joined the Apple affiliate program, which could be a much better deal for me and for you. Here's how it works. Whenever I post links about apps in the iTunes store, either iOS or Mac apps, and you buy through that link, I get something like 5% of the price you pay. Now think about it. These are things you know you're going to buy anyway, so why not click the links in the show notes and help out the show? I just stood up my first link, which is super easy to find. It's a big old lion logo in the left sidebar over at podfeet.com. Actually, it looks pretty cool. If you haven't bought Lion yet, consider using that link to buy instead of going directly to the App Store to get it. I love this idea. It's relevant to what we talk about. You get to feel good about helping fund the show. Everybody wins. Each fee is going to be significantly smaller than we had on Amazon because things are so darn cheap in the App Store. But I figure more of you might click the link, so maybe we make it up in volume. I really appreciate you considering this as a way to fund the show and help me keep up with my pusher, Mark Dalton. All right, calendars out. Are you ready? There will not be a live show on Sunday, the 14th of August, this next coming Sunday. Now, don't think I'm leaving you in the lurch, though. We're going to do it early. We're going to do it Friday the 12th at 2 p.m. Pacific. I'm thinking of calling this the European show since it will only be around 10 p.m. in England and Ireland, so maybe for once we don't have to keep those guys up so far past their bedtimes. This show will be broadcast on Justin.tv, but as usual, just go to podfeet.com/live to find the correct feed of the show. This also means the show will be out early. I'll be producing it on that Friday night, so you'll get it a few days early. Now, I'm doing this because I'm taking a much-needed week-long vacation, but that means I won't feel like working on content during the week. So our dear friend Katie Floyd of the Mac Power Users podcast will be hosting the show on Sunday the 21st. Now, I'm actually going to be in the live chat room along with Steve, but I won't be doing any work. I'll just be making little snarky comments in the background and yelling save like the rest of you guys. Now, there's two reasons you need to know this so far ahead of time. First, you need to do some recordings for her so she doesn't have to work so hard. See, she's going to be working all week long, moving the weekend before into her new house, doing her own show, and creating mine. So send in your recorded reviews to Katie at MacPowerUsers.com. Second, she's going to be doing it from Ustream, not Justin. So again, the best way to know where the show is to watch podfeet.com/live. Now, if you're not already following her on Twitter, you should probably do that because she's probably going to throw out some tweets before she goes live and tell you what time and everything like that. Her Twitter name is Katie Floyd. Now, Katie isn't going to try to do the live audio stream over Icecast, the one that lets you listen with the iOS devices. Just one too many thing for her bandwidth. So I've given myself some calendar instructions to remind me to swap in and out the Justin.tv and Ustream.tv instructions at podfeet.com/live, so hopefully this is all going to work out. I also updated the No Silicast live calendar. If you haven't ever subscribed to that before, you can check it out over on podfeet.com/live, and you can just subscribe to it into your iCal and that sort of thing. So it's a regular .ics sort of thing. So anyway, if you keep an eye on that, whenever there's something weird going on, that calendar does get updated. Most of the time, it's nice and steady at 5 o'clock on Sunday nights, but we're going to be having some fun and really messing with the calendar this time. Hope you got all that, and many thanks to the live chat room for correcting the dates, because I said them wrong the first time I went through. Well, last week I talked a lot about screen sharing, but I forgot the easiest way to do screen sharing on your Mac. Both Melissa, also known as the Mac Mommy, and Connor P. reminded me that if you can see the other machine in your left sidebar, then clicking on it will actually reveal a button that simply says screen sharing. That's even simpler than dragging it up into your menu bar. Barry Falk, also known as @FULKB, also wrote in with a really cool tip. By the way, he's the nicest guy in the world. I'm not kidding you. Nicest guy. Here's what he said. I heard you talking about screen sharing on number 323, and I thought I'd pass along a little menu utility that I use to quickly access other machines via screen sharing. It's called Screen Sharing Menulet and can be found at Klime.com. That's KLIEME.com/screen sharing menulet. Of course, that's in the show notes. He says, why do I like it? There are three nice reasons. Easy to use. It sits in the menu bar and automatically detects both local clients and back to my Mac clients. It's Lion, Snow Leopard, and Leopard compatible, and it's free. Donationware. Well, thanks a lot, Barry. That's really cool. Well, Donald Burr of Otaku No Podcast is actually back to do a little review for us.
Hey there, Allison. Donald here from Otaku No Podcast. Yes, he's back. And today I have a review of the iGrill. The iGrill is a meat thermometer that broadcasts over Bluetooth to your iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. I must admit that when I first heard about this, I thought it was pretty silly. But after getting one for my birthday and using it all summer, I now cannot live without it. Okay, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. Let's start with a problem to be solved. Dinner time is approaching soon, and you have to cook something, whether it's in your oven or maybe you're grilling something on the grill. And, of course, you want your meat to come out perfectly. You don't want it underdone or overdone. So the best way to do that is using a meat thermometer. But you don't want to be tied to your kitchen or to your grill just to watch the thermometer. You want to be able to, like, you know, go into the living room, watch TV, you know, talk with your guests if you're having a party, that sort of thing. And for that, they do have wireless meat thermometers. Unfortunately, every single one I've tried is crap. The range is terrible, and they just don't work. So when I heard about the iGrill and its purported 200-plus foot range, I was a little skeptical. I'm happy to say that this claim is actually pretty close to the truth. It doesn't quite reach across the entire house, but it does reach from either the kitchen or the backyard grill to the living room or the family room. So I can, you know, watch TV or, you know, chat with people or, you know, lay on the couch with my laptop and waste my time web surfing while my meat's cooking. The iGrill is a small, flat, plastic box available in either white or black, about roughly the size of a pack of playing cards. It comes with a standard probe-style thermometer that plugs into it. Optionally, you can get a second probe thermometer and measure two things at once, which is great, for example, like if you're grilling, you know, both a tri-tip roast and some chicken, because, you know, like the tri-tip, you can go to like 135, you know, for medium rare, but the chicken, you have to cook it to like 165 or 175 to be safe. The iGrill itself actually has a little LCD readout, so you can actually monitor the temperature on the iGrill itself. But what's the fun of that? Pair it with your iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. The directions are really simple. And download the free iGrill app, and you're off to the races. This app lets you monitor the iGrill, either one or both probes. It also has some cool extras, including a kitchen timer and a graph. The graph is really cool. It shows you how your meat's temperature is, you know, trending upwards or downwards or whatnot. And, Allison, you're going to love this. You can export the graph data as either a PDF picture of the graph or as a CSV file. Yes, you can run pivot tables on your meat temperatures in Excel. Thought you'd like that. The kitchen timer is really cool because it's not just one timer. You can add multiple timers, which is great because, like, let's say you're making chicken and you're also making cornbread and you're also making, you know, the casserole. And of course, all of those take different amounts of time to complete. So with the iGrill's built-in timer function, you can have one timer for each item. It's really cool. The app is simple and easy to navigate, and of course, it's free. Now for the downsides. Like many meat thermometers, the iGrill has an alarm function where you can set a threshold temperature, and if your meat goes above the temperature, it'll warn you. Unfortunately, you cannot set the alarm temperature on the app. You have to set it on the iGrill itself. This isn't too much of a problem because, you know, you're not really going to be wanting to adjust your alarm temperature all the time during any particular grilling session. But the real problem is when the temperature reaches the alarm temperature, it only sounds an alarm on the iGrill itself. And it's a rather soft-sounding alarm at that. It does not warn you on your iDevice, which is a real bummer. Because unless you happen to be within earshot of the iGrill and all your guests are, you know, stone-cold quiet, you won't be able to hear it. I would like them to add an alarm on the device itself in a future release of their app. But it's a pretty good app, and of course, it's free. And the iGrill itself only costs $99, which may seem expensive, but some of the better wireless thermometers cost around that much anyways, and this thing has them all beat in terms of range. You can get them at the Apple Store, and I'm sure you can also order them online. Hope you enjoyed the review. See you next time. Happy grilling.
Well, thanks, Donald. It's great to have you back on the show. I've missed you. The iGrill sounds like a geek's dream for outdoor cooking. I remember seeing that when we were at Macworld, and we all thought it was dorky, too, but it's funny that it's actually really useful. You know, Steve loves to barbecue. In fact, we haven't used our oven to actually cook meat ever. I think we use it for heating things up and baking cookies, and that's about it. I don't think I have the vaguest idea how to even cook meat in an oven, but I hear people do it. Anyway, maybe the iGrill would make a good present for him. Thanks for the review. Next up, Rod Simmons of the Simple Mobile Review Podcast reviews the dry case for iPhone from drycase.com.
Hello, Allison and fellow Nocilla Castaways. My name is Rod Simmons from the Simple Mobile Review Podcast, and today I'd like to tell you about a product called Dry Case. Before we start, let's establish a problem to solve. You're going on a family vacation to the beach, or you're going to your neighborhood pool, and you'd like to take your iPhone, but you want to avoid any chance of damaging it with water. And that's where Dry Case comes in handy. With Dry Case, it's kind of like a space bag meets Ziploc bag. Dry Case is a crystal clear bag you can put your iPhone in and interact with the screen while the phone is in the bag. So you can place and receive calls, or you can just goof around and play Angry Birds. At the very top of the dry case, there's this easy locking mechanism that you start to create your vacuum seal. And then on the side of the bag, there's actually a one-way valve that you use as hand pump to pull all the air out of the bag and create the vacuum seal around your iPhone. The most important things to know about the dry case is that inside of the bag, there's actually a headphone jack. It's a three-way type headphone jack, so you can get both voice and audio out of the iPhone. But more importantly, outside of the bag, there's a little headphone adapter or headphone/microphone adapter port that you can plug your headsets in. Now, don't do that unless your headsets are waterproof and jump in the water. Once you've done that and you've created the vacuum seal, you're ready to go to the beach and have fun. So you can throw your phone in the sand or in the water and know that it's fully protected. I've used my iPhone in a dry case for numerous years, actually I think about 2 years now, and I've gotten some amazing family video and photos, whether it's just be water splashing or far out in the water with the kids while they're surfing across the waves with their boogie boards. If you're looking to go to the beach or go to the pool and you want to take your iPhone with you but you want to avoid it getting wet, I would highly recommend a dry case. They run you about $37 on Amazon, and they are available via Amazon Prime, so you don't have to pay for the shipping cost. Every time I'm at the beach or the pool, someone has to stop me and ask me how the heck I have my iPhone underwater and what is this product that I'm using. So I would highly recommend anybody who's looking for a good product to use, try the dry case. You already have a great camera, and the dry case, again, only sets you back $37. Hopefully you enjoyed this quick review of Dry Case. It's a simple product, and it will make for a fantastic vacation and fantastic videos. I provided Allison with a link to a video that I've actually done of my family vacation, as well as a couple pictures so you can get an idea of what type of pictures you can get of your family on your vacation.
Well, thanks so much for the review, Rod. This is fantastic. You know, I interviewed the Dry Case guy at Macworld, and I thought it sounded kind of cool, but I was skeptical. You know, you're going to trust a $600 phone in a Ziploc bag? But seeing your photos, even the one of the iPhone in the sand, that really convinces me this thing is real. I really wish I'd had something like this to capture some of my family vacations when the kids were young. I love to be in the water, and I would have definitely had it right there like you did in the video. The still shots of the kids in an inner tube behind a boat with this giant splash coming at you, that's amazing. No one could take that photo without the dry case, that's for sure. I was going to say here I was going to put on my Christmas list, but I went ahead and hit buy because I'm going on the summer vacation. Maybe I'll have an excuse to take it into the pool with me. I put a link to the Simple Mobile Review Podcast website in the show notes, too. Hope you'll come back and do some more reviews for us. That was fantastic, Rod. As you guys know, I'm a member of the Mac Roundtable crew. It's a constant challenge to figure out how to democratically run a giant group of people. When should we record? Who can come? What are we going to talk about? Who's going to do the recording? Who's going to do the production? Who's going to do the show notes? The list goes on and on. We all love the show. We love doing the show. But a few people seem to carry more of the load than the rest of us. Like Katie, who seems to get stuck editing and posting the show more than just about anyone, except maybe Don McAllister. We trick him into it a lot, too. Well, one problem was that Libsyn had changed the whole way you upload and manage the episodes. And then there's the finding the intro and outro music and remembering the password for the website and posting the notes. And, oh, it's hard. So one day, I decided to just sit down and document the whole darn thing using ScreenSteps. It took me a while because I had to figure a lot of it out, but documenting it was super easy. I took screenshots of every step, I annotated the images, and I wrote the full explanation of every step. A simple export, and I was able to post it to a private area for the Mac Roundtable clan. All I had to do was sit back and read the reactions of the crew members. They went something like this. Thank you, Allison. Great work. But I tend to think you need a life more than even I need one. And boy, I could use one. Great job, and thank you. I think I can follow along. Great work, Allison, although there are some steps in there that I never do. We'll follow it to the letter next time. P.S. Where do you get the energy? Now, this is the kind of reaction you can expect if you buy ScreenSteps and you start documenting stuff. You know I'm not kidding, because, I mean, these are real-life stories that I've been telling you here. Go over to ScreenSteps.com and get the free trial, or just skip that step. Just buy it. You know you want to. Tell them you heard about it here. Oh, and go check out the public beta they're running right now on their newest product called Clarify, which you can find at bluemangolearning.com/clarify. Check out that public beta. It's a really cool new product. Well, the live chat room got talking about Clarify here, and Jim Sewell says, Clarify, I mentioned something in the forum. They changed it within one day regarding logins. Very responsive and looking for comments. So definitely try out that public beta, and if you have ideas of how to improve it or things that don't work right, be sure to tell them, because they're obviously very open-minded to it. It's not just me that they answer. Apparently, they answer everybody. In the past month, I've reviewed two different 4G Wi-Fi hotspots, the Samsung 4G and the Novatel 4G hotspot. In case you don't remember, the Samsung did not meet my expectations. Basically, it would not hold a Wi-Fi signal, so I actually sent two of them back. And the battery life was horrible, too. Other than that, I loved it. The Novatel has been a champ, delivering fast download and upload speeds, and several people around my office actually depend on it to go a lot faster on their iPads and iPhones for what we're trying to work on. It also holds a stable connection pretty much all day long. I never have to mess with it. The only beef I do have with it is that it won't charge over USB and deliver any connection to the internet at all, even acting as a USB modem. You have no choice. You have to just sit there and wait for it to charge up. Well, a few weeks ago, my friend John brought in a third type of 4G hotspot, the Rover Puck from Clear.com, and he let me test it out right when he got it. By the way, I'm going to be getting a couple more, too, so we'll see how these all pan out. This 4G hotspot is not associated with any big ISPs. The service actually comes from Clear. The Rover Puck is a giant device compared to the other options we've discussed. It's about the size of a hockey puck or a big hockey puck. It's 4.25 inches in diameter and 0.8 inches thick. It also has four big feet that are on the sides, and they make it a bit more ungainly than it already is. From a physical UI perspective, I had some problems, like figuring out how to turn it on. I showed it to my buddy Niraj, and he found it. The switch is actually black on black. Really helpful. When you do get it turned on, there are various other color indicators that light up on the black that you originally would never have seen. The first thing I recommend you do when you get any Wi-Fi router, whether it's your home router or one of these mobile hotspots, is to change the password to administer the device. You want to do that so other people can't get in and bork it up. And you want to make sure it's set to WPA2 encryption. Most routers are accessible through a web interface, with the notable exception of the Apple Airport base stations. The Rover Puck does use a web interface, but for the life of me, I cannot find a way to even check what encryption they've used, much less change it to WPA2. This concerns me unless they're saying, don't worry your pretty little head about it, we've already set it to WPA2. They do have an option to change the password to administer the device. The default is actually printed on the bottom of the device. The Rover's interface allows you to create a guest account so you don't have to share your Wi-Fi password, but still be polite and share a cup of internets with someone. Now, I mentioned earlier that there are lights that show up on the puck, and they're actually easier to figure out the meaning of than the NovaTel hotspot. They show power, Wi-Fi signal, and 4G signal in easy-to-determine lit-up icons. But they only show as on or off. They don't show you how good the signal actually is. Luckily, they do show you the battery life left, but only when you click the power button once. Like I said, the lights are easier to figure out than the NovaTel hotspot, power, Wi-Fi signal, and 4G, but as these single lights. Now, for the main reason you want one of these devices in the first place, it's to get blazingly fast 4G speeds. But this is where the Rover Puck fell short for me. In my office, where I'm getting 18 megabits per second down and 6 up on Verizon Wireless, the Rover Puck from Clear came in at a measly 2.82 megabits per second down and 0.1 megabits per second up. This was much worse than the 3G speeds that I get on my really old MiFi from Verizon. Heck, that's probably bordering on edge speeds, isn't it? Now, John did some testing at his house, and he did get significantly better speeds, on the low end of what you'd expect for 4G. So as with all of these devices, your mileage will vary according to location. With the Rover Puck, I think I'd be very cautious and check out the coverage maps. I'm not sure that Clear has the kind of coverage you could expect from Verizon or, heck, even AT&T. Now, the Rover Puck is only $25 with a 2-year contract or $99 with no contract. That's really inexpensive for one of these devices. You can even lease it for $6 a month, but you have to sign up for a 2-year plan if you're strapped for cash at the moment. Plans start as low as $20 a month for 200 megabytes, which is probably too small for anyone listening to this show, and it's capped at 1.5 megabits per second down and 500 kilobits per second up. So that's stinky. The higher plan is $45 per month with no speed cap down, but they limit you to 1.5 megabits per second up. And get this, the Rover Puck will not connect to 3G networks unless you give them another $10 a month. So let's review. The Rover Puck from Clear is big, it's clunky, it's slow, the data plans are capped on speed, and the coverage area is much more limited than the competition. About the only thing I can say nice about the Rover Puck is that it's cheap to actually buy. So from these three we've reviewed so far, stick with the NovaTel 4G hotspot through Verizon. So I figure there's about 231,468 iPad cases on the market, so I've resisted the urge to review any of them until now. I got my hands on an interesting one. It's called the Binder Pad from Zougue.com, Zougue.com. It has a unique use that I thought made it worthy of reviewing. The problem to be solved is you're a high school or college student who has to carry big 3-ring binders around to school. It'd be handy if your iPad fit right into the binder. With more and more textbooks moving to the iPad, this could be a great way to carry your books and binder all in one piece. The Zougue Binder Pad is a dark gray case that has a flap on the left side that has 3 binder ring holes. These holes are very securely reinforced, so there's no chance this thing is going to rip out of the binder. The case itself allows you to slip in an iPad 2. The iPad 1 doesn't fit, I'm afraid. You slide it in from the top. The back of your iPad is protected by a very soft suede-like surface. It really felt like it was well protected. After you slide the iPad in, you tuck a little flap over that holds the iPad in place. It takes a bit of fiddling to align the hole on the back with the camera, but it's not too bad. Once you get it set in place, it's pretty good. It's very easy to get it in and out, too. The case allows easy access to the dock connector and the buttons with no alignment issues at all. While the case holds the iPad firmly in place, my one complaint is that the left side kind of bends up. It doesn't stay flush with the iPad itself, so it looks less finished than it could be. I like how little thickness and weight the Zougue Binder Pad adds to your iPad, which is pretty important if you're taking up valuable space in your binder. I'm impressed with the workmanship on the Zougue Binder Pad, and if you're carrying an iPad 2 around separate from your binders, this might really fit your needs and hide your iPad a little bit. The Zougue Binder Pad will run you $29.99 plus shipping from Zougue.com. Again, that's Zougue.com. Well, at work we're stuck on Windows, so I don't get to use Text Expander when I'm there. And it used to bug the daylights out of me. I felt so inefficient having to type things out all the time instead of having a tool do it for me. Then Gene McDonald of Smile told me about a relationship they'd established with the developer Patrick at a company called 16 Software over at 16software.com. And they make a tool called Breevy. Breevy is much like Text Expander, except it runs on Windows. The relationship the two companies formed was based on the fact that since they're working in two different operating systems, they didn't have any competition with each other. So they decided to collaborate and allow abbreviations or snippets, as Smile calls them, to be shared through Dropbox. If you can't use Dropbox while you work, you can zip up the snippets and email them to yourself so you get all that goodness in one place, but of course they're not going to sync. A lot of us are sliders and move back and forth, and it drives you crazy when you don't have Text Expander. Or maybe you've been using Breevy for a long time on Windows, and you wish you had the same thing on the Mac, and now you have Text Expander. I told a friend of mine about Breevy at work. Now remember, it works just like Text Expander. And within an hour of her downloading it, I heard her telling her office mate that this was the best application she'd ever seen. You see, she has to fill out work orders and has to enter the contact information for the technicians over and over and over again. She used to put them all into an Excel file and then copy and paste the info, but when she had Breevy, she could simply type in a couple of characters and boom, all that info just splats out into the form for her. She's in heaven. I'm telling you this particular story to help trigger your brain on the kinds of places you repetitively write things which could be replaced with Text Expander on the Mac. How about this one? I type NM semicolon and instantly it types out my name. Maybe your full name is Joe Bob, and that's not a big deal for you, but Allison Sheridan has a whole lot of syllables and characters in it, and I don't like to type them out. How about your phone number? All that, you know, parentheses and the dash and the numbers and all that. How about PH semicolon instead? The possible ways you can avoid needless typing and avoid repetitive stress injury are as broad as your imagination. I promise that if you buy Text Expander, you'll use it and you'll love it. I can promise it because Smile is going to back me up with their 90-day guarantee on Text Expander. So they'll give you your money back if you don't like it. But you will, so why not just go get it? Every day you procrastinate on buying Text Expander, you're wasting keystrokes. I have saved just under 200,000 keystrokes this year so far. That's 11 hours of typing. Think about it. Do it. Go buy it. Now, save yourself. SmileSoftware.com. Well, it's that time of the weekend again. It's time for chit-chat across the pond. But unfortunately, the venerable Bart Bouchatz of BartB.ie has come down with what he says is the plague. And I hope he's simply exaggerating. But I didn't find out about that until Friday night at about 9 o'clock. And I sent out an all-alert emergency to Donald Burr of Otaku No Podcast, who has graciously agreed to save my bacon. How are you doing today, Donald?
Pretty good. Glad I could help.
Oh, my gosh. When I got your email back from dinner that you were on the job, I was just so relieved, and so was Bart when he woke up this morning to see that I was not going to be left bereft.
Mm-hmm. Good thing I had my iPhone with me.
I think I sent out alerts on every single channel I could possibly think of. I tweeted you. I think I probably Facebooked you, Google Plus'd you, everything I could think of.
Oh, it got through.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. And you've got a topic ready for us today that is something I have absolutely never heard of. So that seems like great fun to me. Why don't you kick us off?
Well, okay. You know, watching movies, TV shows and stuff on our computer is great. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I occasionally like to watch it on the big screen. Of course, Apple has a device for that, the Apple TV, which your hatred of is legendary.
I think I sold my first one off to Jonathan Cost for $50 if he'd just get it off my hands, right?
Right. Now, if I'm understanding it correctly, one of your main reasons that you dislike it is because it kind of forces you to play in Steve's sandbox. So you have to you can only do, you know, stuff that from the iTunes ecosystem. If you want to get your own content in there, you have to like go through gyrations, and half the time it doesn't work and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was just too hard, too restrictive. I mean, I'm pretty happy in the iTunes ecosystem on my iPad and iPhone, but when it comes to the big screen TV, I want to be able to do lots of other stuff, like look at the web too. So I had even done the hacks. I forget the name of the company that had the hack, and
the Apple Core, whatever you call it.
ATV. That's what
ATV
it was.
Flash,
oh,
yeah.
It was just a nightmare. I mean, that was all hanky and weird, and yeah, it was all too hard. I just went and read a book instead.
Right. Well, unfortunately, the device that I have in mind doesn't have the web browser functionality, but it does do everything else pretty darn well. And it's a device, like you said, you haven't heard of. It's called the WDTV, the Western Digital WDTV.
Hmm.
So what this is it's a pretty small little box. It's a little bigger than the new Apple TV, but not as big as the old Apple TV. It's okay. About the size of a small paperback, and it connects to your TV. It has HDMI. It also does component and composite, so it's got all the connections. It even has that optical audio output that some stereo files, you know, fawn over.
Yeah, that's if you don't have HDMI that gives you digital audio anyway. But
exactly, yes.
Connects
to your home network. It has a built-in Ethernet port, and you can also add Wi-Fi as an option if you like.
So you buy it with Wi-Fi, or you have to do a USB dongle?
You have to get a USB dongle.
Okay.
But, you know, for many people, you know, I happen so at least, you know, that way you get the choice, because, you know, some people prefer the Ethernet because, you know, hardwired connection, you know, is always better, you know, especially with HD video, you know, unless you have a really good access point. So, you know, it's up to you.
Yeah, you know, I'm a fan of the wired Ethernet, but my house is just really, really inconvenient for that. I would have to drill a hole in the ceiling of my family room to get up to my bedroom where the router is. And I don't know, we're not big on drilling holes in the house so much. So
And
our Wi-Fi is pretty good with the Airport Extreme, and we don't have, you know, walls made out of wire mesh or anything. So
no Faraday cages.
No, no.
And, you know, it's just your standard set-top media center box. It plays video files, it plays music, it does photos. But here's the best part. It plays pretty much every format under the sun.
Have to be MP4 or whatever?
You don't have to transcode. You don't have to put into iTunes. It'll play like your H.264. It'll play MPEG-4, DivX, XVID, MPEG-2. All without having to, you know, recode everything, which is a pain.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't mind doing it if it's to save, forever because it's this home movie and I'm transcoding it to put it into iTunes. That's not a big deal. But if it's just, I just want to watch this thing right now.
Exactly. And the nice thing with the WDTV Live is it also has a USB port, so you don't just... You don't just have to stream your content over your network. If you've got, like, you know, an external hard drive or like a USB stick with stuff on it, you can just plug it right in and play it right off of that.
Oh, okay. All right. That's cool. So if you grab something off your laptop or something, you can just shove it in there?
Exactly. There's actually two different models of this machine. There's the standard model and the plus model, and the plus model adds internet streaming from places like Netflix, Hulu Plus, Pandora, Cinema Now, a bunch of others as well.
Hmm. Okay, so yeah, that's a good point. Where do you get how do you get to content like that?
Exactly. So, you know, that's the plus model. It has, you know, your Netflix and stuff. But for just your own content streaming over the network, all you need is your file sharing turned on.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, like, I've got an Apple TV hooked up to the TV, but I could just directly look at some of the files on that without having to move them over, do any hinking around with the remotes for that one.
Right. So, you know, you have, you know, any, you know, X number of computers in your house, you know, each of them has, you know, different video files on it. So just all you have to do is just turn on file sharing. And then on the WDTV Live, you know, when you say play a movie, it'll say, hey, okay, I see these three computers. Which one do you want to source from?
And then do you have to, like, navigate down through folders, or does it recognize the content and say, here's what you have available?
It works on the folder. So however you have your hard drive organized, I have to have, you know, all my things organized, you know, under movies and, you know, movie name, TV show, series title, that sort of thing.
You're not anal by any chance, are you there, Doug?
I don't know, but, you know, it's like, it's a matter of personal opinion, but, you know, there are those softwares that try to do all the organization for you, like Boxy and stuff. I never really liked them because they're really kind of fussy and twitchy, and I just I just never liked them. I prefer to do my own file organization. It's like kind of like you with the iPhoto thing.
I was wondering if you were going to call me on that. Pot calling the kettle black right here.
There you go.
What Donald's referring to is when Bart was trying to get me to go into iPhoto and just release control of my photos, and I refused because I've got this incredibly anal structure. Every photo I've taken, and I think it's over 80,000 now, is in a folder by year and then month and date and event. And so luckily, Aperture allows me to do that, but the other things like iPhoto didn't let me do it. So, all right. I'll give you that one.
Now, here's the best part is now, I understand one of your problems with that is that, you know, Steve has all these home, movies that you guys did, and, I guess you burned them onto DVD, but he also saved ISO images as backups. Is that right?
Yeah. And I've been going through and trying to get my energy up to transcode each one of them into MP4s that then goes into, that go into iTunes, but then I lose all the menus and everything.
Exactly. Well, the good news is that the WDTV Live, you don't have to do that. It understands the ISO format, and it can, you know, play the menus and your chapters,
sweet,
and your special features and everything. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Hey. So just, you know, toss a bunch of ISO files in a folder on one of your file shares, and you're done.
So I don't have to mount the ISOs first.
Right. It does all that for you.
Because that was the other thing. We got them on the Mac Mini with their ISOs, but then it's like, okay, you have to double click to launch it, and then you have to open the DVD player and then tell it to go over and look at that DVD. And it's like, oh, man, again, I'll go read a book.
Exactly.
Hey, do you think there's any chance it would actually be able to talk to the Drobo?
Oh, depends on what kind of Drobo. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a Drobo FS.
The FS. That is exactly what I have, and it works beautifully.
Okay, good. So I don't have to do any weird write a script to mount it by the right kind of name that something can understand it. Like,
nope. Just you know, make sure that your Drobo volume is, you know, shared on the network, and you're all set.
Sweet. Okay, I'm going to figure out something to do with that Drobo yet.
There you go.
I think we did dump the movies on there, but I can't do anything with them really.
And you have the WDTV Live, you can.
Oh, nice.
And
interesting.
For people like me, you know, I do the Otaku no podcast, so I watch a lot of Japanese anime and stuff. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about the TV Live is that it supports multiple audio tracks as well as subtitles, which very many set-top boxes don't, surprisingly enough.
Oh, so that would be nice, too, for the deaf, because they depend on those subtitles.
Exactly. The deaf or for, you know, foreign film buffs, that sort of thing.
Right. Very cool.
Now, of course, this is not an Apple product, so the UI doesn't quite have that, you know, refined Apple style. But I still think it's pretty easy to navigate. It's not like, you know, over, you don't go like, you know, 50 levels deep into a menu. It's pretty simple.
Well, that's good.
And again, another thing is, you know, like we mentioned earlier, Wi-Fi is not standard. It's an option. But in some ways, that's kind of better because, you know, not everybody wants it, but also, you know, what if you have 802.11n or, you know, you only have 802.11g, you can actually choose which Wi-Fi adapter to get. I ended up with one that does 802.11n, so because I run my network on, you know, on the 5 gigahertz because that's much less crowded.
Right. Now, did you have to buy a special Wi-Fi adapter? Could you just buy any old cruddy one off the
internet? There's a list of compatible models on the Western Digital site, and I can put a link to that in the show notes.
Okay,
but,
great.
You know, they have different ones, you know, like I said, you know, that different ones for 802. If you just want G or if you want N, you know, there's plenty to choose from.
Okay, very cool. So this doesn't come with any hard drive itself, right?
No, it doesn't. There's actually a model of this box that has a built-in 1 terabyte hard drive. But, you know, I don't really need that because I already have all my stuff on the Drobo anyway. So
Right. Most of us have it distributed all over the place. And that's kind of the point is we're trying to get to that stuff and get it to the TV, not add more stuff to the TV, I think.
Precisely. Right? And you know, you might be thinking, you know, this might cost a lot. But actually, it's cheaper than the Apple TV. Only $85.
$85. Wow. Yeah. So you talk about a plus version and a non-plus model. What's the difference between those two?
you know what? Don't even bother with a non-plus model, because when I was looking on Amazon, I only found it from a third party seller, and it was actually more than the plus model.
Oh, okay, yeah. So at $85, are you gonna want to cut a little price off of that? Probably not, right?
No, it's totally worth it. And to be able to go to my Netflix account and watch from there, that's really handy.
Okay, very cool, very cool. So you've been using this for a while and like it, huh?
Very much.
I think I'm sold. I'm going to add this to my Christmas list.
Definitely worth a look. And it comes with a neat little remote control. Again, it's not quite the simplicity of the Apple remote, but it's pretty well organized.
Sometimes the excessive simplicity gets on my nerves, too. Yeah. The Apple remote is not intuitive to me.
And this remote is common, so all of the if you use a Logitech Harmony remote, universal remote, it's got all the codes for it, so...
Okay, yeah, the Logitech Harmony remote confused us. We sent it back. It was like, it's easier to me to know this is what the DVD player remote looks like, and this is what the TiVo remote looks like. Having them separate to me is very intuitive, because I know it's, of course, one of them is missing at all times, so that's a disadvantage, but,
but we it's haven't nice thrown any away.
Go ahead.
But it's nice to know that if you do use a universal remote, it will have the codes for this.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Well, this is very cool, Donald. I'm putting that on my wish list for sure. So now you had another subject here about...
Yes.
We've been talking, you and I have talked a lot about Blu-ray, and you've been helping us inch our way into Blu-ray in the creation.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the barrier has been watching your Blu-ray content, because, as Steve famously said, it's a bag of hurt. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there is no direct Blu-ray player on the Mac yet. I've heard rumors that various companies are working on one, but so far nothing is definite. Nothing has surfaced. The only way to directly play a Blu-ray on your Mac is to install Windows in Boot Camp and use one of the Windows-based
Wash
players.
Your mouth out.
Yeah,
how could you even say that?
Yeah, that's why, I have a PlayStation 3. That's my Blu-ray box.
Exactly, so do we.
But there is a way, if you rip the Blu-ray to your Mac, you can watch it. And of course, if you also you'll have that file there so that you can stream it on the WDTV Live.
Well, wait a minute. How can you rip a Blu-ray DVD?
There is now a program available for the Mac that will rip a Blu-ray. It's called Make MKV. They say it's in beta, but I think it's kind of like Google's version of beta. But I've used it for years now, and it's worked beautifully.
Okay, so Steve is creating Blu-ray DVDs. So our home movie Blu-ray DVDs, he could rip those.
Right,
seems like a weird way to do it.
If he's creating them, though, he has the source files anyway, so he can just output those directly.
ISO, you mean?
Right. This is more for, if you DVDs, Blu-rays that you buy.
Oh, wow. Because that's been one of the bummers is we've had all these – we like to move our DVDs onto the digital media. I guess it's already digital, but onto our hard drives. Right. One of the big reasons so that we could carry them with us on the iPad and on the Macs. Is this going to let me get that far?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes.
Make MKV will allow me to rip it and then put it onto an iPad or iPhone or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hot dogs.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That is fantastic news, because that's been, I've kind of hesitated to buy as many Blu-ray DVDs. I mean, I will give them the money if I can do what I want with it,
Right, right.
Oh, fantastic. So what does Make MKV cost?
I do not recall the price offhand.
I'll find it while we're chatting.
Look it up on the website and put a link to it in the show notes, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Usually these things tend to be free, but it does look like, let's see. Yeah, there's a Mac and a Windows version, and I'm not seeing a place to push buy. I'm only seeing a place to push download. So I don't know. Oh, and it's actually, there's a version for Linux as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't quite see it. Usually these things are free, because if they start charging, that's when the MPAA comes after people and starts slapping them upside the head. So it may be free. We'll have to check into that, though.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have any trouble with the audio tracks. What about subtitles?
No problems at all.
Wow. So then now how do you play it back on the Mac?
You can use any of a number of video players. The one I like is on the App Store, and it's free. It's called M-Player X, I believe.
Hmm. I have not heard of that one either.
Yes, M-Player X. It's in the App Store. It's free. It's a really good player. It supports all the formats, and it handles multiple audio tracks. It does subtitles.
And it'll play these. So is this keeping this high def then when it comes in?
Yes.
Wow.
So, most Blu-rays nowadays are 1080p, so it'll rip it into a full 1080p file. But, if most of the newer computers nowadays can handle that, but some of them can't. And also, if you have an older, iPods or something like that, you may need to transcode down to a lower format. And for that, I use Handbrake.
Handbrake has got to be one of the best things ever written. That is just a fantastic tool. So let's see. So in order for somebody to do this, obviously they have to have a Blu-ray player slash burner drive in order to do it. You can't plug it into your PlayStation 3 and hook it up to your Mac or anything like that.
No,
right?
You need a drive. Any internal or external, I've tried it with both. It works just fine.
And if people do a search in the show notes for the last time Donald was on, I think was when he helped us find a Blu-ray burner for Steve that has worked perfectly. We haven't had any trouble with it at all. I forget exactly which model is, but search Blu-ray and you'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is awesome. So now what format is the file in when it's done? The MKV? MKV?
It's an MKV, which is a container file format that contains, just like MP4 is a container file that contains, H.264 video or whatnot. MKV is another kind of container, but a lot of programs don't understand that format. But the one that I mentioned, MPlayer X, it does it just fine.
But if I'm doing it from my brand new WD Live.
Yep, it'll do that too.
It'll play it, huh?
Yeah.
So MKV, hardly anybody else listening is going to care, but I love this stuff. MKV is the container. What is the codec? Is it MP4?
Blu-rays use a kind of H.264, I believe.
Ish.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool. Well, that's a couple of really, really hot tips there. Is there anything else to say on that?
I think that's about it.
It's going to work on my Drobo FS too. We're going to find uses for this thing yet. This is fantastic. I can't wait.
Yeah, my Drobo is pretty much the media hub. I've been embarking on on a long project of ripping all of my DVDs, and I've got them all on there, and I can access them from any of the computers or the WDTV Lives or whatever in the house, and there you go.
All right, this is very cool. Well, this is sort of a hodgepodge episode. We're going to jump around a little bit here. But one of the things I wanted to ask Donald about is what kind of gadgets and software and things like that do you find for covering conventions? Because you do a lot of the anime conventions.
Mm-hmm. And we just got back from Anime Expo, which is like the biggest pretty much in the country.
In heaven?
yeah.
So what exactly do you carry with you on a trip like that? What are the critical elements for you?
Well, I positively have to have my MacBook Pro because it's the only thing that can do video editing, that can do audio editing. If I want to post up post up reports, like to YouTube or whatever, the iPad it's almost there. The new iMovie is pretty cool, but you just for that heavy lifting, you really need a computer. So my 13-inch MacBook Pro is like my number one go-to tool.
Yeah, I hear a lot of people talking about traveling with just their MacBook Airs now, and we got to meet Not Nurse Ratched this week, and she was delightful, by the way, not near as frightening as I thought she'd be, and she was traveling only with her MacBook Air, and I guess if I were only consuming information, I could do that, but since you and I both create, and we create on the road, I'm more writing the show notes and that sort of stuff when I'm on the road when I'm at a conference. But if you're editing video, and I definitely do a lot of photo work while I'm there, and I'm always shoving those up to the web and everything, I just don't see the practicality of just using an iPad yet. I could see it in the next couple of years.
It's
we're going to be seeing
there.
Another tune.
Yeah, it's getting there, but still, you know, not quite yet.
Now, I think a MacBook Air can be a good alternative here too. But you and I have both gone; we've gone pro.
Yeah, well, the Air, you know, the internal storage isn't quite enough.
Yeah. You end up carrying an external hard drive, and that sort of defeats the whole purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I also I cannot live without my Zoom H4n, because that thing is awesome. The mics on it are great, and you know, it does a USB audio interface. So you know, if I want to record a podcast episode, you know, while I'm on the road, I can do that. And the H4n has both the, you know, besides the internal mics, it also has two XLR inputs, so I can, you know, grab some of my, you know, my Shure SM58s and hook those up, and I can do a two-person a podcast right there.
Wow. So you can plug your fancy pants mics in, huh?
Yeah.
Now, you and I were both Zoom H2 fans at one time. You've moved on from the H2?
Right. The H4n, it's just, you know, because it has the XLR mic capability, you know, I can bring my good mics with me and plug those in. But actually, for when I do, you know, stand-up interviews, I've actually been liking the, believe it or not, the Zoom H1.
Oh, no, I've never seen this one before. I'm looking at a picture. It's a little, like, candy bar sort of thing you hold in your hand.
It's very small. And, you know, I have a little, I got one of those little puff balls that I put on it. And
you know, Donald, one of the things that I always think of when I see those puff balls is I will never forget when I was in a video chat with a bunch of people, and you and I just started to get to know each other, and I noticed that you had this giant black puffball thing in front of you, and I asked you what it was, and you pulled the puffball off, and it was actually the Zoom H2. And I had a Zoom H2, and I asked you, I said, I was really confused. How are you using a Zoom H2? That records to SD. It's not a mic you can plug in. And you very politely didn't say, you little idiot. You didn't know it was a USB mic as well. So whenever I see those puffballs, I think of you and that incident where I was like, oh, I didn't know I could do this.
Yeah, it escapes a lot of people. It's just this, I think it was this little footnote in the manual. Oh, by the way, you can use this as a USB interface.
And so I had actually read the manual. Just let the record show. I had actually read the manual on that one. Now, why do you use the Zoom H1 instead of, you have an iPhone, right?
Yes.
So I've just started using the iPhone for my on-the-go recordings. It seems to do a really good job.
You know, I haven't tried that yet. I didn't have the iPhone when I got the H1.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, maybe the next convention I'll try it. But
yeah, I've been amazed. I did my interview with Nightwise when we were in Belgium on it. And actually, the entire interview with Kirshen, when we had Alistair Jenks out of New Zealand and she was in England at the time, she did the whole thing over Skype on her iPhone, and it was fabulous. It sounded great.
Wow. I'll have to try that.
It may not be as cool as the mics on the Zoom H1 or the H4n, that's for sure. But and those do look like tasers, which is nice.
Yeah, I'm always afraid that, you know, if I ever have to go through the airport.
Security.
And, yes, yeah.
Yeah. Donald Burr arrested at LAX. I love to hear it. All right, so those two mics. Now, you also recommended the mic that Steve uses now that we hook up to the camcorder.
Yeah,
and then gives me a remote mic. Do you carry that usually too? The
yes,
Audio Technica?
Uh-huh. Because when I'm roaming around, I do a lot of convention videos. So, you know, I don't want this, you know, 50-foot cable tying me to the camera. But not that I've ever done that. Actually, yeah. Last year's scale, I didn't have the wireless setup yet, and so when we were doing the floor interviews, we had a really, really long cable going to the camcorder, and let's just say we almost caused a couple injuries with that. Yeah, definitely, wireless is definitely the way to go there.
Right. So that's three different mic setups. What about for photography?
Well, I've always got my DSLR with me, and the two lenses that I use the most are my 17-50, because that's a good, you know, fairly normal range. But you know, when I cover events, like you know, I may not always get the best seat in the house. So for that, I really absolutely rely on my 70 to 200. That's pretty much the lens of choice for event photography.
Right. Now, are those pretty fast lenses?
Oh, yeah, 2.8.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so you took out an insurance policy on those then.
Believe it or not, you can get good lenses at a reasonable cost. What I did is there's a company I actually rent lenses from, lensrentals.com. And, you know, if this is like a once in a lifetime thing, you know, like your son or daughter, you know, went to the national championships and, you know, insert name of particular sport, or, you know, if you're just thinking of getting into the DSLR thing, you're wondering, you know, what to get. Renting stuff and trying it out is a really great way of, you know, saving yourself some pain and hardship.
I remember when we were in Hawaii, Steve had forgotten the battery for his camcorder, and so we went and we found a photography shop in, I think we were in Maui at the time, and while we were in there, this woman was renting a lens, and she was renting this giant lens. I mean, it was like the size of your thigh, and it was like incredibly inexpensive to do.
Right. It's like, you know, if you're just, you know, this is like your vacation of a lifetime, you know, and you want to go, you know, I don't know, whale watching or something. And it's something like, you know, if it's like something that you only use, you know, once or twice a year, you know, then it's totally worth it.
Now, is this a physical store you go into in the neighborhood?
No, it's online.
Mail you a lens?
They ship you a lens and they include a little label that you just slap on it and ship it right back to them.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
It's pretty sweet. I've known these guys for years. They are absolutely great. You know, I bug them at like 4 o'clock in the morning. Hey, you know, I've got a stupid question. Does this work with that? And it's like, yeah, no problem. They're great. Wow. Customer service is absolutely above, you know, nothing touches their customer service and their selection. I mean, I'd love to see these guys warehouse one of these days. It would be like, you know, tech heaven for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Just sit there and play around. But what a great way to test drive a lens too, to decide whether you want to spend the money.
Exactly.
Right.
Anywho, these guys, what they do is, you know, they own, you know, after like I think about a year's worth of service, they sell their lenses at an extremely good price. And because these guys are really fastidious about quality, you know, their used lenses are like, you know, pretty much look like new.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
So they're not selling junk like buying a used rental car.
Right.
And we all know how we drive rental cars.
Right.
Wow, that's really cool. Well, what about video?
They have video equipment as well, and they've got, you know, all sorts of support equipment, you know, light stands, you know, light panels, tripods, monopods, soft boxes, you know. I mean, look, just like I said, you know, I'd love to see this guy's warehouse. It's probably something to behold, you know.
So how about if you go back and keep talking about what you carry around, and I'll just play on this website looking at things I need.
There you go, yeah. So... the two lenses that I carry are the 17 to 50, which I use, you know, when I'm just kind of wandering around, or the 70 to 200, which I absolutely need when I'm like, you know, covering like, you know, at a theater event, or, you know, if I'm in a panel room in the back, you know, and stuff like that.
Right, right. Now, I've been happy with the lens that I got at Macworld, the Sigma. Now I'm not going to remember what the zoom on it was, but it basically takes me from wide angle all the way up to a big zoom. And I found that when I had the two ranges like what you have there, I was just always screwing around with the lenses. But it's definitely not fast. I think it's like an f6 or 5
probably,
something,
yeah.
That kind of number. It's not anywhere near a 2.8. So for conference photography, 2.8 is spectacular.
Yeah, that's definitely, especially when I'm covering like concerts and then at anime conventions, there's a thing called Masquerade where, you know, people dress up in costumes and do skits. Mm. And that's like in a theater setting, you know. And for that kind of lighting, you really do need to be able to go wide open.
Right, right, right. Okay, so what kind of video camera do you carry with you?
I have the Canon HG21, which is a hard drive-based camcorder. You know, that's the one I use when I'm, you know, filming around, you know, doing interviews and around the convention and stuff. The problem, of course, with most camcorders is that they're small, and, you know, it's so easy to get, you know, your shaky cam.
Yeah,
You know, unless you're, you know, unless you're making a, you know, Bruckheimer movie or something, that's not really appropriate.
So how do you stay steady?
The one thing that I got that I really love is a it's called a shoulder rig, and it's this, basically this thing that kind of, think of it as kind of a rifle butt for your camera. It kind of butts up against your shoulder, and it provides an amazing amount of stability. And this is the kind of thing that, like, you know, run and gun news camera people use. And they're surprisingly affordable. You can get really good ones for like under $50 now.
So that might be something I'd like to see a link to, because I'm trying to search for it. Maybe you can add that in the show notes later.
Sure.
To see what one you like. I'm finding ones made by people for fun, and yeah, but they don't look too expensive. That might help, because I know, you know, Steve is the videographer in the family, and when he taped Lindsay's graduation, I remember even though that camera weighs just hardly anything, an hour or two later, it weighs about 1,000 pounds. And so that kind of thing might really help him out for those sorts
of things. Absolutely.
I think he started setting it on the head of the woman in front of us partway through. So do you use a tripod then or no?
I do sometimes. When I'm, let's see, at the last convention I was at, you know, when I'm covering, I was, this is actually the first year that we went as official press, which was really cool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the press guys, they get their own little area that they can set up and use a tripod in. So I actually brought my tripod and, you know, and it really saved my shoulder.
Oh, I bet. But that's a lot of crap to carry now.
That is a lot of crap to carry. A reasonable alternative is a monopod.
Yeah, Steve is real happy with his monopod. That seems to be a good compromise between something that's light and easy to carry and small, and
exactly,
yet gives you that steadiness and it helps your shoulder out too.
Exactly, and they double as they do a pretty good job doubling as a billy club.
Just in case that comes up, right?
Yes, always be prepared.
All right, now, so you got to put all this crap in something.
Yes, and I love bags, camera bags, and
what is it about geeks that those two things go together? Right, we like a lot of gear, and then there is no good perfect bag, right? We have to have lots of them.
Exactly. Now, I do not, however, like backpack style bags, because let's just say I've come pretty close to causing thousands of dollars of property damage just by, you know, turning the wrong way.
Oh, that's, you know, I live almost entirely on backpacks. So, but I do knock into people. That's for sure. I think the reason I like a backpack is because I can distribute the weight of the 2,000 pounds of gear I seem to want to carry into two shoulders instead of one.
Yeah, that's true.
But that does cause you to bang into people.
Right. And so, I actually have two different bags that I use for different purposes. I have a shoulder kind of a messenger style bag that I use. You know, when I don't have a whole lot of gear, I can carry a camera with one extra lens as well as my computer. It's a really good bag by Tamrac. I think I have a link to it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But the one that I use, you know, when I have all my stuff, like let's say I have my Zoom so I can do on the floor interviews, I have the wireless kit, I have the camcorder, everything. For that, I really love rolling bags.
A rolling bag for that. I always think of that as luggage, but that might be a good solution.
They make them in all different sizes too, so you don't have to get the, you know, gargantuan, you know, you can hide a dead body in it ones. Yeah.
That's what I love talking to you. You're perfectly sane for most of the time, and then you say things like that.
Yeah. The one I really like is the Low Pro Pro Roller. I have the X100. It's like I said, you know, it's a really good compromise between size and carrying capacity. I can stuff a lot in that bag. I carried in my the convention that I was just from. I just came back from. I carried, you know, my camera, my big lens, the my normal lens, my video camera, the wireless kit, the Zoom H4N. I carry that all in this one, you know, rolling bag. It's really pretty easy to manage, and these things are great. They use inline skate wheels, so they're extremely rugged.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of neat. I'm looking at that Pro Roller 100. It's only 11.5 inches by 6.6 by 15.7 inches. So it's a small bag.
It's a small bag, but it's
none of that weight is on your shoulder.
Exactly. And it's really efficiently laid out inside. It has these little dividers that you can move around so you can, you know, configure it to exactly what stuff that you're carrying.
Oh, and it carries your up to a 14-inch notebook as well.
Yes, it's a great bag.
So I might have to go up to the X200, which is a little bit bigger. That's 15-inch notebook size.
Mm-hmm.
That is really cool.
Yeah, it's a slick bag.
All right, so all this fun. You're at a conference. You're tweeting away on that phone. You're answering email. You're Google Plus, and your battery's run out on your iPhone by now, right?
Yeah, except I carry battery pack thingy. And I know, Alison, you have the Mophie case.
Actually, I'm probably the only person on earth who doesn't. I have a different brand, but I'm not sure I'd recommend it for today's iPhones. But which one do you have?
I have one called the 3G Juice, and it just kind of clips onto the bottom. And the reason why I like it is it doesn't get in the way of my fancy iPhone case that I really like.
Oh, so does it just plug into the dock connector then?
Yeah. And it pretty much doubles my iPhone battery. I can definitely go through an entire day. I can probably go through half of the next day as well. It's really great. And it plugs into your computer to charge up. It has a little, you know, one of the standard mini USB ports.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's a great.
So I'm looking at it online. It's an 1800 milliamp hour battery, which is really on the high end. Mine's a little higher than that. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's big and clunky and definitely a little weirder than most. I think people wouldn't be happy with it. Do you ever feel like you're going to knock it off, though, with it hanging off the end?
You know, I'm pretty rough with things, but so far I haven't.
Okay. So it feels stiff enough. It doesn't feel like it's dangling on the end of it.
It clips in there pretty good.
Okay. Good, good, good. All right. What else do you carry with you?
Well, you know, when I'm back in the hotel room, there's one axiom about hotel rooms and geeks: there are never enough power outlets. For that, I carry this great little device called the Monster Outlets to Go laptop, and it's a small cube, maybe about the size of an airport express if you've seen one of those.
Mm-hmm.
It plugs into the wall, and it has three outlets that you can plug stuff into. It also has two USB ports, so it can directly charge your USB devices.
Nice. Now, I bought one of these, and one of the things I found was that if I actually plugged power, you know, if I plugged like two laptops in and something else, you know, and then I tried to do USB, I would almost instantly hear my iPhone doing that little ring it makes when you plug it in, and then ringing again and again and again because it wasn't charging. So I was usually not able to pull as many things as you could plug in. I couldn't actually charge that many.
I have no problems at all.
Okay.
I use all three devices, all three plugs. You know, I've got my laptop, and you know, I'm charging a camera battery or something else, and I've got, you know, something else, and I plug my iPhone in, and as well as the other device that I'm going to mention next, and I have no problems at all.
They don't have any good pictures of both sides here, but it looks like it's got a plug on the side and then on the edges. So
it has one plug on one side and two plugs on the other side.
Okay, but that's good if you've got big, giant things you got to plug in, right?
Like a wall
separated.
Wart.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
And then the two USB ports.
That's excellent. That looks a little better than mine.
Yeah, and it's really small and easy to pack. So that's another reason. Very compact. That's why I like it.
Yeah, that looks a lot smaller. The one I've got is, I can't remember who makes it, but in the picture it looked really tiny and cute, and it's like the size of your hand.
Yeah.
Giant thing.
Yeah.
All right, what's your last thing in your bag there?
Last thing in my bag is my MiFi.
Gotta love the MiFi.
Yeah. Now, I've got a Verizon iPhone now, so I have the hotspot. But the problem is that's capped at 2 gigabytes. And, you know, if I'm doing the Ustream streaming and the, you know, post-twittering and the, you know, uploading podcast episodes.
Yeah, not going to work.
You know, burn through. Exactly. Now, I used to be a Sprint customer. And, you know, for that, I had my Sprint MiFi, which was great. You know, it's pretty much the last man standing in terms of unlimited data.
But right, right.
Now that we're on Verizon, I decided to go with a Virgin MiFi. They use the Sprint, They use the Sprint network.
Okay.
And, you know, so it is pretty much the last unlimited game in town. And it's prepaid. It's pay as you go. So, you know, I only pay for 1 month of use. I use it, and then, you know, then they don't automatically charge you again.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
Until you want to, yeah.
So what's a month cost you?
For unlimited, it's $50.
So kind of steep, but the fact that you can say, okay, I got a convention, I'm going to go to it, I'm going to use it, but for my day-to-day usage, I'll use the hotspot on your phone?
Exactly, and not having to worry about, you know, oh, if I upload this video, am I going to go over my cap? Because, you know, when you go over your cap, they charge you like over $9,000, you know?
Right. You know, I don't mind paying for what I'm using. Two things I don't like. I don't like the $9,000 thing, but I also don't like having to worry about it and think about it.
Exactly.
I remember having, when I had like 60 minutes a month on my cell phone, and it's like, I remember my brother calling me from Hawaii, and I was going, well, I can't talk to you very long. I'm on my cell phone. We got to hurry up. And he just went, you're a moron, Allison. Change your data plan. And I did, so I could talk to him more.
But yeah, the Virgin MiFi, you know, it's just the same as your other MiFi. It just
so is that 3G or 4G?
3G.
Okay, all right. So I've been doing reviews of several different MiFi options. You will have already heard by this time the Rover Puck from Clear, which I don't recommend. But the Novatel from Verizon is really, really nice. I'm liking that for the 4G access. So it's getting there. But I don't know yet whether they've got a any kind of an unlimited plan like that where you can go month to month. I don't think they do.
I don't think so either.
And I'm getting a couple more to test out. So we're gonna be having some fun here.
All right.
All right. Well, this is pretty interesting. I keep thinking, you know, when we have a conversation like this, well, we've talked so many times, I'll know what he's going to say. I had no idea that was going to come out with so many good things that I've never even heard of.
Yeah, there's some great stuff out there.
All right. We need to keep touching base, because I bet by the next time we talk, you'll have something new in your backpack that I never would have thought to buy.
I have no doubt.
All right. Well, Donald, I really thank you so much for stepping in on such short notice and putting together show notes on such short notice and bringing some really cool new products to our attention. So why don't you tell people how they can find you?
Sure. I'm on Twitter, dbrr. I also have donaldbrr.com, which I'm working on. It's going to be sort of the portal to everything I do online.
Okay.
My main gig is Otaku no Podcast. It's a podcast about Japanese animation and manga, comics. Otakunopodcast.com. Google it. We're the first ones to come up.
Sweet.
We just got back from, like I said, we just got back from Anime Expo, which is like the biggest anime convention in North America, certainly. And I've been posting videos and interviews and photos like crazy. So check those out at otakunopodcast.com. And there you go.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, how about your cooking shows? You know how much I love your cooking shows.
I actually have another one that I'm working on this weekend that'll be coming out soon.
Sweet. If you haven't seen Donald Burr making sushi, you really haven't lived.
Yeah, especially with all the cheesy special effects that I did.
And the Star Trek references. I mean, that's what, it's just fabulous. Great entertainment all around.
Yes.
All right, Donald, thanks again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Not a problem. Happy computing.
Thanks one more time to my hero, Donald Burr of Otaku no Podcast, for rescuing me when Bart fell ill. Bart was really happy, too, because he hadn't left me bereft without a co-host. Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Many thanks to our sponsors for helping pay the bills, Screen Steps, and Smile. Don't forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. If you want to join in the fun of the live show, head on over to podfeet.com/live, normally on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time, but this coming week only, 2 p.m. Pacific time on Friday. So let's see. Let me check the date one more time. I'm going to do it with my calendar so I don't mess it up. It will be Friday, the 12th of August at 2 o'clock. But normally, it's 5 p.m. Sunday Pacific time. You know the drill. Go to podfeet.com/live and you'll catch up. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.